Welcome back. This is Tracy Zemiska, and I'm here with Leo Chung, and he has a podcast out of Vancouver, actually, which is how I found out about him. Welcome, Leo.
Thank you.
And I was really excited about having him on so that I could talk to him kind of not just about, obviously, his yoga journey, but why he decided to do the podcast. I know I try to hit home every time I speak with someone that my main goal for doing this is to just bring awareness to yoga and to help people who might not ever try it feel that it's more accessible and provide an opportunity for them to learn a little bit more about different styles and why people are motivated to do yoga. So I certainly want to get your take on that. But let's start with your yoga journey. How did you find yoga? What was going on in your life? What kept you coming back?
Gotcha. So my journey started now 6 or 7 years ago, and I had graduated from university doing a marketing degree, but the last year of that degree, I had already knew that that was something I didn't really want to do. At least in my mind at that time, I didn't want to be doing a corporate job, wearing a tie and a suit, and just wasn't my passion. And I just knew that, but I just continued doing the degree and finished it and knew that was sort of the practical thing to do. And from that, I went and traveled for 2 years, going to different places around the world. I started in Mexico and Guatemala and through South America. And then I came back thinking that, oh, maybe some sort of job or opportunity would pop up in my life. And of course it didn't. I was, quote unquote, listening to the universe and hoping that something would come about, right?
Right.
And, you know, it did, but just in a different way. And I was living at home with my parents in the suburbs. And my dad had a bad back. And he was doing yoga at the time, him and my mom. And so I joined them because I was unemployed and doing nothing. I was like, okay, I'll do some yoga. And I was doing it. And, you know, I think a lot of people have expressed this before where they feel like they're at home. You know, it's coming out of Shavasana and there's this feeling of resonance of like, of calmness. And this is where I'm meant to be. And like a feeling that I haven't ever really felt before, or at least was conscious of that feeling or that experience. And so I talked to one of the teachers there that I really resonated with. He was a little bit older, so, you know, I looked up to him. Not a lot older, maybe just like, I think 5 or 6 years older. And he was doing that, he's teaching full time as a yoga teacher. And I thought in my head, you know, in a naive way, like, oh, I can teach yoga. Like, I can teach people how to stretch and breathe in, breathe out. It should be pretty easy. And also thinking it'd be a cool job as a way of avoiding like real life responsibilities. And, you know, this would be a great way for me to travel and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had only practiced actually 6 months. And I just jumped right into a teacher training. And so I did my first one in India as a way of continue traveling and exploring the world and myself. So I did my training there for 6 weeks. It was amazing.
You know,
to be able to be in India and to live there, to see their culture, you know, incredibly transformative. And, you know, having the experience of also doing it all at once in 6 weeks was incredible. Where, you know, where a lot of trainings are spread over a few months, this one's me living there and eating and practicing yoga every day with 20 other people. really fast forwarded me into the practice. That was one thing that this teacher training was different from a lot of the other ones. It was very practice focused. So every day it would be 6 a.m. meditation and chanting, 2-hour practice, breakfast. Then we have asana clinics and philosophy. Then we have a break and then 2-hour practice again, meditation at night, pranayama. And that was just every day for 6 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. But however, as a lot of other teachers who have gone abroad said that they got a lot of understanding about what it was like to be a student, but didn't really have the teaching tools. So although I got a chance to teach a whole hour class, there wasn't much talk on cueing or sequencing the anatomy of the body, which was fine for me at the time. It didn't really matter so much because I wasn't even sure if I wanted to teach just because I was still so fresh to the practice. So I got what I got and really enjoyed it and traveled a little bit more in India. And then I came back and was kind of in the same place that I left, still at my parents' place, living in the suburbs, unemployed. And I thought, okay, well, you know, with these 2 years of travel, I want to do something with what I've learned and what I've gained. And so I plunged into teaching right away, not really knowing what I was doing either. But so a lot of trial and error. For sure. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself after 1 year, or sorry, in the beginning, that if after 1 year of committing myself to teaching, that I was still living with my parents and not making a living, then I can decide to do something else. But only until then, if I really give it my full shot, put both 2 feet in, could I really know whether I could be successful or not. So I made that commitment, and after I made that commitment, about 6 months later, I was teaching full-time at a whole bunch of different places, yoga studios, fitness centers, rec centers, indoors, outdoors, just wherever you could teach, I was doing it. So that, one, to get experience, but then two, to really see if, you know, teaching full-time was possible. And I was teaching like all over the place. So I was going around and you can call it hustling, everywhere to make it work. And in that 1 year, I learned a lot. And then after that, I did another teacher training because I really wanted to understand what I was doing. And this one was done in Vancouver, in the Anusara method. And this taught me a lot about the teaching technique that I didn't get when I was in India. And then from there, taught some more and did another 300-hour training in LA with one of my great teachers, Noah Maze, who was also Anusara trained, but now teaches his own method and, a combination of a lot of different styles of Iyengar and Ashtanga, and got mentorship from him for a year and came back and then started teaching teacher trainings, just completed our second one. And venturing into different things like podcasts and online projects. And here I am 6 to 7 years later.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome that you did the Anusara. I was, when I first started going through, I guess, my journey, I learned about Anusara. And we have locally a teacher who is really popular. She's been teaching for a long time. And she's a Jiva Mukti Anusara teacher. And she's kind of created her own style between the two of them called Jivasara, and so she teaches in that way. But I kind of discovered Anusara maybe a year or two before everything kind of exploded with John Friend, and I was really disappointed that I had just found this thing that I thought was amazing, and there was all this turbulence within the style, and people were leaving, and teachers were, you know, leaving the affiliation and things. So I think that it's sad that it's sort of happened that way, but I also think that people still regard it, you know, with respect, and especially in the way that teachers are trained through that style. It's not necessarily common, and I think that it has a good blend of the philosophy part of yoga and the anatomy part of yoga, which is so important. So it's cool that you've gotten such a varied background of information there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in the same boat too, where I got to experience it on the tail end about a year before everything happened. So I was never really part of the community, but I got to have a taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are very few teacher trainings who teach from that method anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm lucky to have gotten what I got in there. And now I also think there's a lot of room for ourselves to be creative and to do something of our own, kind of like your teacher who's blended the two. I think there's a lot of room for personal creativity and development.
Definitely. And I think that, and I think too, I will say, I have, based on, you know, the podcast of yours that I've listened to with the teachers you've talked to in Vancouver, I do think that the yoga community there is older than the one that I'm a part of here in Ohio. And so we don't have as many teachers who've been teaching for a really long time. I think probably the people who are doing like big name teacher trainings here have been practicing for a while, but the studios themselves, you know, probably I think the most people might have is 10 or 15 years experience in terms of having the studio and owning a studio, and that's probably a select few, maybe like two or three, and then the rest are relatively new. And I used to live in Cleveland, and in that area, it's a lot more power focused. It's mostly Baptiste style, and that's about it. You have like Baptiste yoga, and then you have a couple of small studios that have been around for a really long time, but they're steeped in a lot more of the traditional Eastern yoga and meditation and pranayama that just isn't really a part necessarily of some of the Western or the Westernization of yoga itself. And so I think it's interesting, you know, to see kind of where everybody comes from and just how the different styles can emerge and how people are trained. My teacher training was Ashtanga-based, Pattabhi Joyce Ashtanga-based style, but I still didn't necessarily learn that much. Do you know what I mean? The philosophy part was cool because we actually, luckily, the person who put it on had enough forethought to acknowledge her lack of experience there. And so she hired a professor from a local college to come in and teach philosophy, which was helpful because he actually knew a lot about it and we could ask a lot of questions. But we didn't have like really any study of the sutras or a discussion of that. It was so much more focused on just learning the poses and learning how to teach the poses, and that was about it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my practice was strong. I was practicing Ashtanga 6 days a week, and I was doing it, you know, and being there and trying to be in that space. I have a cat. I'm sorry.
I heard.
Usually they respect my space when it comes to my podcast, but for whatever reason, she's acting up today. So I apologize.
She wants to be podcast.
She does. And right. She does this. I can't tell you how many times I've recorded like meditations and things like that. And I'm just like, guys, for real? Because I have two cats. And
yeah.
It never fails that as soon as I kind of get into it, one of them will come in and just disrupt the whole thing. So sorry about that.
No worries.
But yeah, I think that, you know, as I learn more about just yoga in general and talk to other teachers, and that's one of the things I've loved about going to teacher trainings, and maybe you can speak to this too with yours that you've done in different areas throughout the world even. It's nice to talk to teachers from all over the world. It's nice to hear about their stories and how they teach and even like what music they play and their sequencing and things like that.
Mm. Yeah, The most international teacher training that I've got to experience was when I did mine in LA with Noah Mazzei. I was coming from Canada, so I had to fly down every 2 months to do a training there. And there are people coming from, a lot from the States, but one woman from Saudi Arabia, another one from Mexico, a few from Canada. So, got to experience a lot of different styles and different backgrounds of teaching. However, fundamentally, I also noticed that, we're going through all the same things. We experience all of the same challenges we have with students or with how to structure our classes. It was good to see that. And then we'd break off and go back to our own places to teach and take what we learned and apply it, and then come back and rap about it again. I've never lived in a different city where I got to teach there and experience a different community. Like, I'll drop in and do a class when I'm on vacation or traveling somewhere. So I can't really say what it's like to be in a different country or city and see what the community is like. However, when I started teaching first 4 or 5 years, it was in the suburbs, so it was definitely smaller. There weren't any of these big corporations. They're all mom and pop studios. And now, having moved into Vancouver, the city, teaching for bigger corporations where there's like a chain of studios of four or more, certainly a different experience, different energy, I guess you'd call it. And a different sense of community too. So I'm discovering what that's like. That's really important to me, and always finding ways to build community and whatever that means. It's always redefining for me. So yeah, my dream actually is one day to move somewhere, and that I'd like to live, like, I don't know, France or even within Canada, Montreal, and see what the communities are like there.
Yeah, I think it's a struggle for everyone, this idea of building community, especially when you might not be tied to one studio. Like, I teach a million different places, and so I'm able to experience lots of different people and be parts of different communities and different studios, and I love that, but I still don't necessarily feel like I've found my community yet, and or have built, what I'm looking for out of a studio. And I sort of felt initially that I had to own my own studio to be able to do that. And I'm feeling now like that's not really necessary, that you can still kind of create a space, even virtually, that, provides people with this place that they can go to and be a part of and, learn and grow and evolve with. So the studios that you teach at now, are you teaching just one studio, or are you kind of all over the place still?
I'm teaching at two studios right now. So most of them are within a 5 minute, 5 to 10 minute walking distance, which is amazing. Incredibly fortunate for that. I used to be driving hours, not hours, but like, anywhere from half an hour to an hour to the studios I taught at. So I'm lucky to be able to teach in my community. And, to speak to your comment about, being at different studios and kind of wanting to be in one place so that you could have one community. I wish that were true. And I also wish that the studios that I taught at also cultivate the community themselves. Because even if I did teach at one studio, it doesn't necessarily mean that there would be a very strong community there. Unless, as you said, as an owner or as a studio manager, that's something that they really value and want to create, because it does require some effort and some work and some logistical planning to get people together. Because I have taught at one studio primarily, and that wasn't the case, because a lot of teachers are just going in, and you see them in passing, but there isn't really an opportunity to really bond or have a like really deep connection unless I personally go out and make that effort. So yeah, that's why I'm always questioning what does it mean to be in community. And yeah, does it mean owning your own studio and then being that person that is creating the opportunities for everybody to meet and build community and share experiences together?
Yeah, I think it's definitely hard. And I think that there is a lack of that, even between teachers. It's hard sometimes to, and I've talked about this in other podcasts, how teachers are compensated, like how we're paid. And, in the Cleveland area, I moved about 30 miles, 40 miles south of Cleveland last year. And in Cleveland, it's really competitive, and it's hard to break into that community of teachers, and it's hard to make a living doing it. It's difficult, and I feel like there's a lot of fear-based kind of stuff around that, which is what increases the competition. I found that to be less so here, but it's also a lot smaller in Akron than it is in Cleveland, so that has a lot to do with it too. But I do think that until, yoga teachers, I think, are compensated in a different way and they feel more maybe ownership of building communities and building their classes in a different way other than just making money, I'm not sure that will grow on its own, And, mm-hmm. and I mean, I'm even that way too. When studio owners want to have a staff meeting, it's hard to get everybody together because we all teach a million different places and you can't find like one time where everybody can come in. But at the same time, like that time is my time that I'm not being compensated for. And so, I'm reluctant to go sit in a studio for 3 hours and just babble on about, who's going to change the toilet paper and who's going to wash the towels. Because I don't often think that those necessarily build community or create, what we're looking for among teachers. And it's hard to get to know teachers when you teach a bunch because you can't necessarily take their classes and be there around them. So I do think there's going to be a shift, within the next 5 to 10 years of how studios are run and how that interface changes between the owner and the teacher. I know that there's studios in Washington State and Oregon and also New York that there's been issues with the IRS already about, are these people really 1099 employees? And I'm sure that in Canada you have independent contractors, but we have to file what's called a 1099. So everybody kind of refers to them in that way. And there is a blend, in the U.S., the IRS is saying, well, if you have somebody who's coming to your place the same time every day and they're doing the same job function every day, they're technically an employee. They're not allowed to be an independent contractor. And that opens up a whole other host of issues for studio owners, especially in terms of financially, because now they have to pay a lot. They have to pay taxes and they have to pay all this extra stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to pay if you're an independent contractor. So I think that the more the government gets involved, at least in the United States, the more difficult things will become, and then things will have to shift into a different system. And maybe Yoga Alliance can kind of do something about that preemptively to help set up systems differently or come up with different ways of doing things. But and I'm not sure how it is in Canada, but I'm assuming it's pretty similar to here.
Yeah, we're considered independent contractors. I haven't heard of the same issue of what you have down in the States. So I imagine it'd be much tougher for studio owners if that were the case.
Mm-hmm.
To speak on your comment about studio owners and hosting meetings, I wish that a lot more studio owners or managers would host teacher meetings, because it would give us opportunities to, voice opinions or what we think would help the studio, or just getting to know the other teachers or hear what the vision of what the studio owner has for the studio and the practice itself. But I agree, it is tough. It's disheartening when you do host a meeting and only, 25% of the teachers show up.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Or yeah, I show up and nothing productive happens. And, you know, there's 3 hours of my Sunday. Or, you know, studios owners just not being able to pay us for our time.
Right.
Now, I think it also depends on who the studio owner is hiring on then. Are they aligning with the values of the studio itself? And if community is one of those values and every teacher that teaches there values that, then perhaps those teachers would be more inclined to volunteer their time because that's something that's really important to them. Just like a practice is very important to them. They may not get any monetary compensation for practicing, you know, at home for themselves, but they will invest their time into that. So personally, I would invest my time into going to a teacher's meeting if everybody else at the teacher's meeting valued community as much as I did. And I know that over time, that would benefit me in the long run in many different ways. And one of them could be financially. If we are all in it together for the same goal, end goal of creating community. And the feeling of competition comes up, in my opinion, is because we aren't in community. And more often than not, I've experienced many years of this, when I don't have relationships with other teachers, there is a very strong sense of separateness and isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I think that everybody else is out to get me, or, oh, look at this teacher. She's teaching this awesome workshop and it's jam packed. You know, I better teach something like that too.
Right.
And not being able to empathize or relate to them on the experience of a teacher and, you know, realize we're all in this together for the same reasons of teaching yoga, more or less. You know, we're all wanting to help people. And, you know, that's when self-doubt comes in. That's when negative judgment or stories of my own come in and not have anybody to reflect that back to. And then this increasing perspective of competition arises, that there's not enough for me.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And I think that that is a struggle, you know, I think with all teachers. And I think too, you know, a lot of times it depends on where you live probably as well. But, you know, I think that there's kind of a mixed bag. Not as many people here are doing yoga full time. They are supplementing it with other things, or this is something that they do while their kids are young and they have a partner at home that's able to kind of care for the majority of the financial responsibilities. And I'm not saying that if you do this full time and this is, you know, your bread and butter and this is how you are surviving, that you somehow have a greater stake and therefore are more motivated. But I do think that it's just on your mind more because that's your career and that's what you're basing a lot of your time and energy and your creativity in, is how to be better at what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that can be part of it too. And I think that we're all kind of learning together. I think there's a lot of studio owners who are new, who might not have been doing this for as long. And, you know, a great yoga teacher does not necessarily make a great studio owner. And there's a struggle in that. You know, if you might be really wonderful at teaching, but might really suck at business. And, you know, trying to find that balance of being able to do all of that, I think is hard too. But one of the things that I do like about having multiple studios around is, because I've had clients who've said to me, wouldn't it be great if you could just work at one place all the time and not have to run around like a crazy person? And from a convenience standpoint, it would be. But I really firmly believe that people need to go to different teachers to have a well-rounded practice. And if I taught, there isn't a studio around here where I live that, first of all, could support the amount of classes I need to be able to pay my bills.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the first thing. And secondly, if there was, it would just be mostly me on the schedule. And that really limits my students from being able to go to other teachers and to grow with their practice. So, you know, if you want to talk a little bit about that, too, that's another area where competition comes in. We do have teachers around here that have a really codependent relationship with their students and have convinced them that it's not really safe for them to be in other classrooms other than theirs.
Well, you know, I think we're in reversal roles, where I came from a small town and then now living in a big city, and you've come from a big city going to a small town. So we're getting to experience what we both got to experience in our previous years. So, yeah, now I'm starting to see how there are multiple studios and lots of different teachers, and you know, certain teachers, including myself, have generated a following, you know, whether by our own intentions or not. There are students that primarily come to my classes. They may go to others too, but you know, every student has their favorites that they go to, including myself. There are certain teachers I like and there are certain teachers I don't like. And that's dependent on a lot of different things. So it's not to say anything about who they are as a person. It's just like, you know, I say this to some people, it's like, you know, there's some restaurants I like to go eat at and there's some that I don't. It just appeals to my flavor. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that's good for my growth or not, that's another thing. You know, if I went to a teacher that I, you know, that my ego didn't like, would I grow more as a student? Probably. Whether I go to more teachers and experience all the different teachings, is that better for my practice? Would it be more well-rounded? I'm not sure either, because am I just kind of learning things from a superficial level in a sense? I don't really get to dig very deep with one particular teacher because I'm always going to so many different ones and not being able to build a relationship with one because I've got relationships with 10 others. Mm-hmm. Kind of like being having a primary partner one-to-one, or having many partners in an open relationship, which one is more beneficial? It depends on what I want in that particular stage of my life. Mm-hmm. So right now I don't practice at studios and don't go to any other teachers except for one who is an Ashtanga teacher, and I go to her house and we do privates 101.
Oh, you know, that's awesome.
The funny thing is, like, I have studio passes to, you know, memberships to many of the studios in Vancouver, and I could practice for free, but, you know, I've now chosen to pay money out of my pocket to go to an Ashtanga teacher that, you know, I'm starting the primary series and it's like kicking my ass in a sense because it's so different. And I'm finding I'm learning a lot of things that I just wouldn't be able to learn from being in a studio.
Yeah.
So I really don't know what is best. It really depends on what a student wants. So if someone's going to ask me what would be good for my practice, I'd really have to know first what they want and where they want to go. In terms of competition too, I'd like to hope that our numbers in our class wouldn't reflect upon whether we get to keep a class or not as well.
Yeah, you know? I think, you know, and I also think too, it takes patience, and I'm not sure how it is where you live, but, and I tell new teachers this a lot, in my experience, it takes about a year to really build a class. Like, if you put a new class on the schedule that's never been there before, and you're a newer teacher at the studio and you don't have a following yet, it's going to take you some time. And people need to know that it's always going to be there, and you're always going to be early for your class and have everything set up and waiting for them to show up. And I know there are teachers who will, if you only have one or two people, they will cancel the class. Like, they'll have people show up and say, well, I'm not going to teach today because there's only one of you. And if I have a student that comes and they want a class and they're fine with, they're comfortable being the only one, I'm going to teach. And I try to, you know, persuade them to stay. There are people who feel uncomfortable not being in a full class. And so, you know, when I first started teaching, it might just be one or two people that come. And, or when I start a new class that's brand new that has never done anything before and is not at a choice time slot on the schedule, I know that I'm making this commitment for at least 6 months that I'm going to really, you know, try to hit this class hard and be there. And I think sometimes teachers and studio owners are a little bit too quick to let go of the potential of a person and or a class. I have worked at places that were very numbers-based, and we actually would get mind-body reports every month at the staff meetings letting us know what our numbers were and how we compared to the other teachers on staff. And it made the atmosphere really difficult to work in. There was also a lot of rules in the way that the classes were taught, and part of it was that it was not just a yoga studio only. It was a spinning and yoga studio, and it's a franchise based in Toronto, and so there was this need and desire for there to be continuity, even though there's probably not going to be a huge overlap of people coming from Toronto to Ohio to go to these places. But I had a teacher that worked there also who'd been teaching for a really long time, and she participated in our teacher training, and she had said to me the one time, the people who need you will find you, and the ones who don't will find who they need. So you never need to be worried about who's in your class that day. And I still struggled for a really long time, and I still do. You know, every once in a while I'll feel shitty about the fact that I didn't have the turnout that I expected. But it was really freeing for her to say that to me and to make me, you know, stop focusing on the numbers and focus on the content of my class and focus on holding space for people and being there. So I understand what you're saying. I think it can be difficult to find a balance. And I think it's hard for studio owners. They have a responsibility not only to their staff and themselves to make money, but to provide a really strong schedule for their clients. And I think that their motivation is very different sometimes than the teacher. You know, they're about the numbers. And they have to be to keep their business going, and I understand that. So
Yeah. There's balance. There's no perfect formula, unfortunately. And I feel for the studio owners because I've built relationships with many of them and, you know, can't feel, I'll never really be able to experience what they experience until I own my own studio. But I feel for a lot of them and see them, seen them go through the challenges and also have taught at many studios where they have either changed hands or had to completely shut down because they couldn't sustain themselves. And so, you know, I can understand when they say, Leo, we got to drop this class because it's just not working. They're pulling money out of their pocket for me to teach.
Right.
And they're not making any money. And I agree that it requires sometimes a little bit of waiting period or a little bit of trust that if they trust the teacher in what they're doing, that perhaps over time, students will come.
Yeah.
Maybe. But even that's a risk, right?
For sure.
Which is why I think that it's really important for myself as a teacher to always be in conversation with my studio owner. That if I notice that over, let's say, a month or 2 month period of time that students aren't showing up, that I call my studio owner or manager and say, hey, I'm seeing that I own up to the fact that my classes aren't reflecting great numbers, knowing that this is troublesome for them as an owner. How can we modify this or change this? Do we need to change the class time? Do we need to change the class itself, make it a yin or restorative class instead? Be willing to give it up to some other teacher that I think might be better for that time slot because, you know, the students in the morning or just resonate with this teacher more than I be moved to a different time and you know, make a quote-unquote sacrifice if that's just going to help the studio stay alive so that I even have a job in the next 6 months to a year.
Right.
All of these things can only be done through conversation, through relationship, and through teacher meetings, which just in my experience of over 7 years, haven't had very many of those at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I do the best effort that I can to have personal one-on-one relationships, but, you know, perhaps I may have a full class, but then my neighbor, my teacher, fellow other teacher doesn't have a full class and they're struggling. Well, it ultimately won't serve me in the long run either for me to just have a full class.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely, you know, the point that you bring up about building community, even among the teachers, is really important. I think it's something that, you know, as teachers, we can probably do better and try to acknowledge that, you know, individual success is then in the long run, overall success for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to make an effort, you know, as I've taught longer to be honest with myself. Like, I just gave up a class a couple weeks ago because it just wasn't working. You know, nobody was coming. I was getting like one or two people in the morning, and I had been teaching that class, I think, for about 9 months, and it just didn't seem to be working. And so I texted the studio owner, who I talk to all the time, and I was like, dude, I don't know who you want to give this to, but somebody else needs to take this over because I'm not doing anything with it. And it's not fair, you know, for the students or for other teachers who might want the opportunity to teach that I keep this class. Like, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense for me, you know, to drive out there every day and sit for 15 minutes until the class has begun and wait and no one show up. And so I agree with you. And I think getting to know other teachers is helpful then that way, because then you can make recommendations like maybe such and such would be better with this and maybe they want to take it. But I also wanted to just kind of circle back. You were talking about, you know, your recent, maybe not recent, but that you are doing privates in Ashtanga. And if you wanted to talk a little bit about the difference maybe between that style and how you first learned or how you were first practicing and why you've chosen to now kind of delve into that place.
I moved to an apartment that was a 5-minute walk from an Ashtanga Mysore studio, and I want to experience that. So I bought a pass there and started practicing there pretty often early in the mornings, and I never experienced this style of practice. It's very different than your typical drop-in one-hour classes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Is it Mysore only, or do they teach other types of styles there? I mean, in terms of the class structure.
Mysore only, and then on certain days they have led practice where everyone practices together and it's instructed. So primarily Mysore, and you know, I remember the first few times I went, the experience of being touched that often and that intimately and that unapologetically was very refreshing and eye-opening. I have my perspectives on the sequence itself, but I'm trying to let that go.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just trust the process. And I'm there, well, at least in the beginning, I had my walls up, you know, because like I had my perspectives about teaching. And so I couldn't really let myself get into the practice. However, I did meet my current teacher now there. And unfortunately, as I was starting, she was about to leave. So I only got to experience 1 month of practice with her. So after she left, there were a few other teachers there, but they were a little bit, they were less experienced than this one. And so, you know, my interest there sort of just faded and I stopped. And it was not only until maybe 6 months later did I hear from another teacher that she teaches privately out of her home that I was like, okay, great. This is exactly what I'm looking for. I want more intimacy and just more time with her, because even within a studio, she works with me, but she's also working with 10 other students.
Right.
So every Wednesday night, I go to her house and we practice together. And it's different, for sure. You know, it's something I've never experienced before.
I found Ashtanga first. Like, that's the first style that I really have learned. And it was always led classes out of the one studio that I did my teacher training at. And I definitely, like, from my own background, personally, like as an individual, while I have a really hard time with authority and boundaries and structure and everything, that's something that I've lacked the majority of my life. Like when I was growing up, my household was just very chaotic and there wasn't a lot of structure. And so it's something that I've always wanted, and I had a lot of self-imposed structure and rigidity in my own life as a result of that, I think on the subconscious level, to make myself feel safe and comfortable in my world. And so being more type A and liking the idea of a competitive practice, not so much with other people, obviously, but with myself, like pushing my own boundaries and seeing how far I could go, really appealed to me. And I liked the structure of it, and I liked the routine, and it made me feel really comfortable in that space. I will say, as a teacher, when I stopped teaching at that studio and started teaching at other studios and had to learn how to teach a regular vinyasa class that wasn't Ashtanga based, like not coming from that place, it was really hard for me to change that up and to start the class without doing what I normally started with. I mean, just the invocation itself was the way that we kind of began everything, and not having that at the beginning of the class was difficult for me to learn how to lead students and to understand how to sequence properly. But I also grew as a teacher as a result of teaching different styles and stuff. So I think that helped. But that's what I loved about Ashtanga, was just kind of, you know, where, and I used to sit and watch like Patabi Joyce lead on YouTube. Mm. You know, just watch him and what he would say and how he would count. And I mean, we had to do all of that. We had to count in Sanskrit and stuff, the teacher mm-hmm. training I went through. So it was very familiar, and I loved it. And it's hard because I've never had necessarily a guru of sorts, but he's probably the closest thing. And I do get very defensive when people talk about there's negative stories about all the gurus. And I'm like, no, it can't possibly be him too. but I have found, even in my own way, I started teaching an Ashtanga fusion class, which was probably, it was very new to the area here. And I got a lot of pushback from teachers locally. I would get nasty emails from them telling me that I was like bastardizing Ashtanga. And it shouldn't be made to be accessible to everyone. There's a reason that it's a specific practice and not everyone can do it. And that's why it is what it is. And people should be striving to accomplish that instead of me making it accessible to everyone. And I really struggled with that. And I found myself having to defend my own education. And I know in England there's a lot of this elitism within the Ashtanga community, and how many, what level you're at, and how many times you've been to Mysore, and who you studied under. And so I'm wondering, like, if you, I know that you're sort of newer to it, but have you found anything like that on your own with Ashtanga in your community?
Well, I'm not part of an Ashtanga community, and even when it was very briefly. However, these stories I've heard of myself too, and just know that there is a hierarchy to a degree, and there are levels to achieve and series that you're initiated into. Even the fact that you don't get to go on to the next pose and be presented what it is until the teacher tells you that you're ready to do that is already a very different form of practice.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can't really speak to that. Mm-hmm. However, it does sound like these teachers are protecting their lineage and holding their practice and what they know and their tradition to a high standard, and in a sense enclosing their what they know to be Ashtanga and not letting it be diversified and and evolved through other teachers like yourself, who they may see as lesser than who their guru is, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure.
Who's to say Tracy is now privileged enough to have her own form of practice that comes from Ashtanga and calling it her own thing? You know, I don't know. I think everything's just meant to evolve over time.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah, and I think that that's where it kind of I think that's how you define who you are as a teacher, you know, is what do you bring to the table and why do you teach? And I teach because I found empowerment through yoga a ton, and not just, you know, on a like psychosomatic level, but also physically. I found a lot of empowerment and I got to learn about my body more, and I had a space where I could have a conversation with my body in a way that I had never been taught to before in my whole life. And I think that the more that people get connected to their physical structure and learn about it and be friends with it and build a strong relationship with it, then all the other stuff is a lot easier to handle, you know, on an emotional level, accomplishing your own goals, making the right decisions for you in terms of healthcare. All of those things kind of fall into place a lot easier from my experience, you know, when you have this really dedicated relationship with your physical self. And it probably, you know, when I think back and look back at things, I think that I started learning that through Ashtanga. Like, that's where I got that from initially, was feeling the effects of the practice and noticing when I would move through my everyday life, you know, where I might be sore, where I might be tight, where I didn't notice that before when I wasn't practicing. And it just helped me to kind of unlock different areas of understanding, you know, within myself on a physical level even. So I do think you're right. I mean, I think it depends on what your aim is and what you're passionate about as a teacher. And for me, I'm passionate about getting people on the mat and trying to make it as friendly as I can. And so I had this thing that I was devoted to and loved, and I wanted to be able to share it with people in a way that was not intimidating.
Mm-hmm. And I think that if anyone creates anything and there's some form of criticism, then we're on the right path. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. From a teaching standpoint, do you feel like Ashtanga has influenced, or your journey with it now has influenced your teaching in a way, or do you see it more as a personal practice only?
It always seeps into my teaching in some way, shape, or form. However, I am trying to create some conscious boundaries around my own personal practice as a student and then my practice as a teacher. And that way I create separate time for myself as a student to learn, rather than always wearing the teacher hat. So for sure, my teacher has taught me a lot of different things I haven't learned in my other trainings because they were never Ashtanga based. But, you know, she's also teaching me things that are just not as applicable to how I would teach in my public classes, because mm-hmm. she's teaching me in a very private way, in right. a very personal way. And so the level and layers in which she's working with me, and I'm not at the place in my own practice, or is the environment suitable for that type of teaching? So, yeah, not as much as other trainings. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm confronted often, and I say these things a lot in the podcast, meeting new people, especially men, who say they want to try yoga or they've always wanted to come to a class and that they're really afraid. And what do you tell people when they say, like, if you could name, like, I don't know, three things or something, advice for someone new to yoga, mm-hmm. what would your advice be?
First one, investigate why they're scared and where it's coming from. Is it because they've done a yoga class before and they were intimidated and teacher shouted at them, or they just had no clue what the hell they were doing and so mm-hmm. they'd never want to come back? Or is it a way of masking another feeling, which is like feeling of insecurity and feeling like they'd be left out because everybody else is doing headstand and they can't? Mm-hmm. Or is it just like the fear of unknown and just I don't know what it's going to be like. So I just want someone to hold my hand a little bit more and tell me that it's okay to be a beginner. So, generally I'd say, come and try half the class, come and try something that's more beginner based. And I teach at, let's say Saturday at 3 o'clock. Come by and let me know. I'll meet you at the front desk and I'll walk you through and give you some help. And, if they do decide to come, that's really based on them, that they trust me and that they believe what I say, that when they do show up, I'll take care of them. And so if they do show up, I pay particular attention to them and give them extra encouragement for where they're at in their practice and show them through experience that what they perceived to be yoga and what the experience would have been like is totally not that at all. And once they've had that experience, then they can never go back to that perspective again.
Yeah, for sure. I wish that there was a way, and I applaud, not that it's that big of a deal, but it feels that way. I think it's great that you are a teacher because I think, especially where I live, there's a lack of male teachers, and I think it makes it less accessible for men to come. And a lot of times, the people that talk to me about their insecurities are men. They're afraid to come to class because they think that it's going to be a room full of 20-something gorgeous, women in Lululemon, and they don't want to sweat in front of those women, or they're afraid they're going to fart in front of those women, or they're going to fall over. And I try to just remind them, generally speaking, everybody's eyes are on their own mat and your own practice, and no one will really notice you. It's not going to be that you'll be some sort of spectacle. But I do think that having more male teachers would be helpful for kind of spreading yoga.
It would be helpful. And I also believe that on a very generic level, yoga studios are not idealistic for men to be practicing in. At this current moment, it's not an environment that really, I wouldn't say, I don't think nurture is the right word, but it doesn't support what men are looking for. I think, I don't know what really men are looking for, but it's just not the best environment to introduce a man into because of the type of space that it is and who you're practicing with. Just like for a lot of women, they have women's only gyms. And, that could be a very good way of like a gateway for a woman to go into a gym which is primarily full of men. So I teach at a CrossFit gym now to CrossFitters who would like more flexibility and range of motion. And a lot of men are there. And so that's how they get introduced to the idea of stretching and mobility. We don't call it yoga because it has its own baggage, right? But at the end of the day, we're doing very similar things. Body awareness, breath.
Yeah, and I think that that's important too. Like a lot of the people that I interface with that are guys, they're like, oh, well, I did P90X, and they have a yoga section or whatever. That's how I know yoga. And I think that it's helpful to try to be really open about where you teach and what you teach and how you use it and what you call it. And there's a lot of kind of discussion within locally the community about fad yoga and getting people to do, one of the studios I teach at does a TRX vinyasa class. So they use TRX and they do vinyasa and in the same class. And there's a lot of people who, even if there's, we've that studio has lost several teachers because they didn't like that the owner added in, a boot camp class and added in a spinning class and added in the TRX. And they're like, this is supposed to be a yoga studio. Why are you doing this here? And he's just trying to stay competitive in the market and, give people an option of different ways to work their bodies so that. Because there are people who use yoga primarily for fitness. That's the reason that they come. Not everyone's there because of a spiritual quest. So I think it's great to do things like what you're doing with going to CrossFitters and saying, hey, see how this can help you, see how this can benefit you, mm-hmm. and give people the tools to make their lives better and to make their bodies work a little bit easier or better for them in the ways that they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the fundamental question is what I'm offering of value. So if TRX and yoga combined is creating value and people want it, then it's worthwhile having around.
Mm-hmm.
And just like stretching and yoga postures in a CrossFit gym, if there's value and people are coming every week to it, then great. I'll continue to serve in that way. So who knows what manifestations of yoga, how it manifests in the world. I think the primary question, does it create value? And if it doesn't, then, you know, we have to reevaluate why we're offering it. What's the purpose? And the value could be in so many different ways. It could be a physical value. Does it like create the feeling that I want in my body? Or does it have some sort of psychological or spiritual value, some way of enhancing my life? It's hard to know.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, amazing, though.
Yeah. You know, like our podcast, do we know whether is it providing value, or, you know, is spending 2 hours having a conversation with somebody, is that having impact? You know, hopefully mm-hmm. there is. But, you know, when we start out, we don't really know. But I think we're finding that out now, at least.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no, yeah. For sure. I definitely think so. I think it's helpful to listen to, from a teacher perspective, it's helpful to listen to what other teachers think and the other things they're struggling with. And, you know, I have two good friends that are teachers that are doing kind of different things, and I don't get to see them as often as I might like, but on the days where I am just overwhelmed and I'm like, F this, like, I can't do this anymore, I need to go back to working a desk job, I can't handle this, I know that these other people are deep in it too, and just knowing that they exist is a comfort in and of itself. And so the more I think that you, as a teacher, get to know other teachers and build relationships with them and friendships and have candid, really genuine and open conversation about the things that you are thinking about doing, your ideas, your struggles, how it makes you feel, I think that is very helpful in the long run. You know, when you have those days where you're just like, I'm done. I can't mm-hmm. do this. I can't give anymore, you know, and you've lost inspiration as a teacher, and you wonder, like, am I really doing anything positive here? Am I really making an impact?
Right. Yeah. I went through this in the past year. It always fluctuates, but I had the same question in my mind, like, maybe doing a 9-to-5 is actually a better way of living. You know, I thought about, oh, maybe I want to be a carpenter. Oh, maybe I want to be a barber, like just totally doubting what I was doing, whether it had value or not, because, you know, we don't really ever get to sit down with our students and say, hey, like, how is this impacting your life? You know, or we do hear it and it just passes by and like, okay, good. But then, you know, the same doubts about what we're doing creeps up, which is why I started in this month something called the Teacher's Circle. And this is a project or an offering that I'm created where it is an ongoing meetup or a community where we meet every week. And this is for teachers only. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether you're a new teacher or an experienced teacher, but we meet up every week and we sit together for 2 hours and I facilitate conversation and exercises for us to be able to share our experiences, you know, similar to what you were saying with your friends when you get a chance to sit down and just vent sometimes, you know, mm-hmm. saying things that are on our mind that we couldn't say to our students or even other friends who aren't yoga teachers, can't relate on the level that we do. Just be able to say it. Most of the healing or most of the relief comes from doing that and being heard. That's something I think as yoga teachers, we don't get to do very often is be heard. We're heard in a way in which we instruct our yoga classes, but we don't really get to be heard without being like totally unfiltered,
right?
And understood, right? And we're not judged for feeling the way that we feel. And so far there's been a lot of good recognition for the teacher circle and a lot of teachers wanting this because they are also experiencing what I'm experiencing. So hopefully, you know, it's only been the first month, but it keeps going, and then there's value from it for myself and then also for the community here.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's important to facilitate things like that and to make time and space for. And you're so right too. I mean, there's things that I struggle with, you know, on a personal level as a teacher. And I was just talking about this the other day with one of my friends, that I don't necessarily always feel comfortable talking to my students about, you know, putting in a blog or bringing it up in class or saying, I feel this way too. And I'm somebody who's pretty unfiltered and really open, but there's a lot of times your fears and the things you struggle with are just overwhelmed with insecurity. And so to put that out there, you know, you're already feeling badly about whatever it is that's weighing on you, because oftentimes it's kind of steeped with insecurity and worth issues. And then to put it out there is so incredibly scary because you just don't know what the reception is going to be or how people will respond.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot of times we just don't then share. And we're often struggling with a lot of the same things.
Mm-hmm.
I also did, you know, I had to take a lot of time, though, to and I still struggle with this all the time, but my worth as a teacher and what I have to offer is not tied to my numbers necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to learn how to not take it personally if something that I was really excited about doing didn't go over the way that I thought it would, or just because I had a rougher week where I didn't have as many students in my studio classes as I normally do, that doesn't mean I'm a crappy teacher. And it was hard. It's hard for me sometimes to not tie those two things together.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I resonate 100%. And it's hard to not. I remember those days when people were lying in Shavasana and I would count the bodies lying on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And, a double-digit number would make me feel good. Like, mm-hmm. And this is me being very transparent about, that feeling and then walking out of the class and whether I got a thank you or whether I got that was an amazing class, best ever feedback or response, and how that would make me feel. Feeling the high of that, but then also feeling the low when there was a couple students, or like you could just see that they didn't get what they wanted and they sort of just walk out, and me creating a whole story around that, what that meant. And it is certainly much more liberating now in the stage of my teaching to really not care. Not care for it's sad to say, not sad to say, but it's like, I really don't care what students think about how I taught. Mm-hmm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Right? Right. It's like, am I caring less about my students, or am I just caring less about the results? I'm still trying to see what the balance is there.
Right.
But now I'm challenged with, in my life, who am I if I'm not a yoga teacher?
Right. Like,
do I still have worth in society if I one day decide to not be a yoga teacher anymore? Who am I going to be known as?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I'm not going to have the same recognition that I do for my contribution in the community. that's what I'm struggling with now. If I choose to one day not be a yoga teacher, who am I now?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, I think though people are intrinsically something.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some people who are always going to be teachers in some way and leaders in some way. And what you bring to the mat as a teacher now is not going to change based on what your profession is. Like, your motivation for getting up every day and, it, like, at the heart of it, your motivation for being who you are and choosing what you do really isn't necessarily going to change just because you choose to do a different profession.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that motivation purely in and of itself is still to make the world a better place, you know, to do something worthwhile that has a positive impact on the space that surrounds you, at least, you know, maybe the smaller reach or in a greater reach the whole world. But I think you'll always find that way to connect with people in really intimate and genuine ways and be a guider or a teacher in some way. Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, it's the ongoing journey of letting go and detachment of, like, the things that we create and the identity that we have. Yeah, I think, you know, on some level, there will always be a part of me that may count some numbers or feel mm-hmm. a little bit of the high from having a packed class or, you know, just being able to tell somebody I'm a yoga teacher and the pride in that. But then, you know, as we mature as teachers too, the whole perspective on it changes as mm-hmm. well. So
I had a really hard time though when I first started teaching full time. I had like a regular job obviously and taught part time for several years, and then I lost my full time job last March and wasn't really sure what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to do what I was still doing, you know. I didn't want to keep doing what I was doing, and I felt really disconnected from my work and the products of my work. And so I loved doing this, and this is what I wanted to do. So I kind of pursued that full time. And I lost my job in March, and I would say probably wholeheartedly I threw myself into being a full-time yoga teacher and looking at it as a business probably beginning in August or September last year. So I'm coming up close to that kind of one-year anniversary of this is what I've been doing for the whole year, and this is when I really chose to make this my path. And I would say for the first 6 months that I taught full-time, people would ask me what I did, and I would say, well, I have a master's degree in urban planning, but I'm teaching yoga right now. Like, I had to qualify myself and mm-hmm. let them know, like, I have some use other than just teaching mm-hmm. a stupid yoga class. You know, like, mm-hmm. I don't know why it was really hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, I can just stand up and be proud about it and say, well, I'm a yoga teacher and I also am a Reiki master and I do life coaching. And these are the mm-hmm. things that I do with my time. And I love being able to connect to people in this really authentic way that I haven't been able to have in other spheres of my, you know, previous work lives.
Mm-hmm.
But it took a long time for me to stop saying that mm-hmm. and to just own who I was and to be comfortable with it. And most people are always like, wow, that's really cool. That's what you do. Like 90% of people that I tell that's my job, they think it's amazing and they think it's the coolest thing. But I was so afraid to be that in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and I think it also depends on the community in which we live in. In Vancouver, a lot of people practice yoga or at least have so in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I tell them that I'm a yoga teacher, a lot of them are like interested or like they are a little, maybe even envious, like, oh, wow, you get to have this amazing lifestyle and you get to create your own schedule and do yoga every day, you know, whatever projections or ideas of what a yoga
right.
teacher is like, right? But, you know, as you've said, 90% of people are interested or,
right.
or curious. I never came from any type of professional job working 40 hours a week. So, you know, I didn't have the same experience as you do, but I am curious about what, you know, somebody's true underlying perspectives are of us as yoga teachers, how they see us in society and, you know, in comparison to, let's say, a doctor or any other profession.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if I want to hear it.
Keep to yourselves, right?
Yeah. Unless I ask you your opinion, I don't think I want it.
But I think the validation, at least the self-validation I needed to have was, because, you know, perhaps my first year, I may have felt the same way that you felt, but until I had achieved a certain amount of accomplishment or success in my career, I could feel the pride that I have in being able to declare to somebody that I'm a yoga teacher. You know, mm-hmm. Now that you have a podcast and there's listeners and you have an offering on your website and just you've established yourself after a full year that, you know, you are living off of being a full-time yoga teacher, that, you know, there is a sense of pride in saying,
oh, yes, for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that just is what it takes, is to be able to show. Like, I had to show to my parents that, yes, it is possible for me to be a full-time yoga teacher, because in their generation, it's just unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a totally reinvented career that didn't exist 20 years ago, but now it's certainly something that a lot of people are pursuing.
Yeah, I think I always joke that I could be making $1 million a year as a yoga teacher, and my dad will probably still say, when are you going to get a real job?
Right.
<You know? laughs> So I agree with you. I think it's hard sometimes to come to that space. But what I think is awesome is the things that you're doing, you know, with your podcast and if your teacher circle. I think that that's really helpful for teachers. And, you know, not even having known who you were, my friend Natalie was just like, oh, you do a podcast, you should listen to this guy.
Mm.
And she sent me a few of them that she thought that I would like, and I loved listening to them, and I felt just a sense of community, even just listening to the conversations that you were having with the people that you had on your podcast. And so, you know, I think that any time that we speak about what we do and we're able to offer our own experiences, it's always so helpful for other people, even if it's just a level of camaraderie, you know. So I would say don't be frustrated in that perspective, because I think that you probably have a larger or a further reach than you might realize in terms of what you do on that level. And I think that yoga is evolving in so many different ways, and your role in it will continue to change and evolve as it does.
Well, thank you. At least now I know there's one person in the United States listening to my podcast.
It's me.
Yeah.
Well, and hopefully other people will as too. I mean, and we should wrap up because I know you have to get going. But just before we do, you know, I do want to encourage the people who are listening, however, you know, the five of you or whoever it is might be listening. You know, please do check out Leo's podcast. And I will, as always, I'll have all of his information that he wants to share with you in the comment section for this. But, you know, I think that his podcast, although it is a little bit different than mine in terms of format, there is so many there's so many things that it offers, especially teacher-based. I mean, there's a few that really kind of give you a perspective not just about, you know, what it means to be a teacher, but how the community might differ in Canada than it does here, and especially particularly in Vancouver. I have only experience the Toronto community in Canada for yoga. And even within that community, it kind of varies based on the studio you go to. So, you know, please, as always, if you heard anything today that Leo said that you liked or that you really resonated with, let him know. As teachers, we love to get feedback, and it's very helpful for us to be better teachers. When, you know, you take a minute to let us know what you like, what you don't like, what resonates, what we should do more of, because we're also just trying to figure this all out ourselves. So, you know, we're kind of all on this journey together of how we can be more of service and use in our world. But thank you so much, Leo, for being here.
Thank you. It's been a great hour of conversation with you, and if you're ever in Vancouver, come up to Canada and experience what the community is like up here. And yes, thank you for sharing what you're doing. You know, I got a lot from hearing your story and what you're offering right now too.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thanks for listening, guys. We will be back with another one soon.
Thank you.